What's going on, listeners? I'm Aaliyah Mia Garcia, aka Aaliyah Mia Sweets, America's sweetheart, your favorite candy girl, and you're listening to Wrestle Life Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestle Life Radio, episode 163. I'm your host again, Micah Sen, here with my wife, Riley. Say hi, Riley.
Hi, Riley.
See, you did it. You got the gimmick this week. Yes, yet again, Kyle and Matthew are not here, because let's be honest, we're the only ones that care about you. Week after week, we show up here, we bust our backs, blood, sweat, and tears, on the mat, I mean the podcast for you. And yeah, I mean, they just can't even bother to show up. I mean,
I guess some people would call us the Kenny Omega of this podcast, right?
Yeah, we're carrying this show and like two other shows. It's crazy. It's a lot of work, but somebody's got to do it. We do have a This Day in Wrestling History this week, which I think is a pretty big one, because in 2001, Vince McMahon, well, Shane McMahon, bought WCW. On Raw. That's right. Vince was trying to put it off until WrestleMania, and Shane McMahon just swooped right in there, and we all know how the storyline went, but it was a very iconic episode of Raw. Honestly, at the time, it seemed like there were a lot of options for what they could have done, but, you know, it went the way that it did, and here we are. But yeah, pretty iconic day in wrestling history. But let's get straight into another iconic day in wrestling history, and that was last night on AEW Dynamite. Because I think it was a pretty good show. We open up with your AEW champion, Kenny Omega, versus Matt Sydal in a non-championship match. I thought this was really odd to see Kenny Omega opening the show. Did you know now that Cody, Shaq, and Kenny Omega have all three opened for a show headlined by John Silver?
Oh, wow.
So he is the true star of AEW. That's right, the TNT Championship match headlined the show, which I think is a great decision. I think this match set a great pace for the show, and I think it's great to have the TNT Championship at such a high regard on the show. I think it's pretty cool. But yeah, I thought this was a really good match. Obviously, Kenny Omega is your favorite wrestler. How did you feel about it?
It was extremely good. I really liked the whole entire match. They both worked well off of each other, and I liked the... Well, I don't really know if there was really a story that they were portraying, but basically, Kenny murdered Matt Sydal at the very end,
Yeah, Matt Sydal is one of the best sellers in wrestling. Like, he can make anything look like it killed him. I actually watched a clip today where Big Show speared Matt Sydal, and he genuinely thought he was injured. Like, the way he landed was, like, so unnatural and just... I mean, I guess it looked really natural, but unnatural for a wrestler. But he did really good. He had the counter to the One Winged Angel, which some people didn't care for. But man, that was a great false finish. I mean, obviously Matt Sydal is not going to end Kenny Omega's undefeated streak. But for a second there, the counter made you believe. So I thought that was really cool. So yeah, obviously Kenny Omega did win. He did retain. Don Callis was on commentary. JR called him an idiot. And that was my favorite thing in the whole match. After that, we then had Alex Marvez backstage with John Silver and the entire Dark Order. And he asked him how he's getting ready for tonight's title match. And John Silver says he's ready to go, and he's been practicing all week. And basically, he's having the entire Dark Order, like, do trust falls on him, but they're like, coffin drop, and they fall, and he's, like, dodging them. I thought this was a really funny segment. It was a very, very BTE-style segment, which they're doing more and more of with John Silver, which is great. Hangman is there in the background drinking, and he comes up to John, and he's like, you know what, John? You know, do your best tonight, but it doesn't matter if you win or lose. These guys are still going to have your back, which is really cool to see from Hangman, like some real character development, like some real what appears to be trust and friendship in these guys. I'm really glad to see Hangman have a group that's supporting him. And you hear the tippy taps in the background. That is my dog. I'm not editing that out because she's going to do that probably all show. This is Dog Life Radio, so get used to that. But yeah, the segment ends with John Silver basically just screaming Johnny Hungy and like looking all menacing into the camera, which I thought was pretty funny. After that, we have Hangman Adam Page versus Cesar Bononi. Bononi, which in my opinion is not the best, right? He's a wrestler, and I don't want to hate on anybody in particular, but I mean, I don't know if y'all saw that segment with him and Luchasaurus on Dark a few weeks ago. It was real bad. Anytime I see him on TV, he just doesn't really scream like professional wrestler. Like, he's got a good look and everything. He's a big guy, but he just doesn't, he doesn't have like the natural movements of an athlete, in my opinion. But I mean, this was like a 3-minute match. Hangman squashed him with a buckshot lariat in like 3 minutes. There's really nothing to it. Hangman's getting the victories. I think he's undefeated this year. They did mention that Hangman is getting back into contention for the AEW World Championship. He's got to be like number one contender by now, right? He's like 8-0.
I don't know.
Yeah, he will be before too long. They're going to have to give him a loss to prolong his conflict with Kenny Omega. So interesting to see where that's going to come from and how that's going to work. But yeah, they basically just brought that back up to further the Kenny and Hangman feud, even though they haven't been face-to-face in quite some time. Yeah, it was a decent squash, I guess. I mean, there's nothing to it. We then had just a backstage warehouse area thing, as you tend to do with Lance Archer. And he basically cuts the same promo he did last week, where he says that Sting, or that he would have been nowhere without Sting, but he's tired of everybody paying such close attention to Sting that now people are going to pay close attention to him. The walls are going to come crashing down around him, and people are going to remember his name. This was an odd segment. Did you think so? Like, I don't know. It came off a little weird. Like, it just kind of, it like abruptly ended.
I don't really recall it abruptly ending. I thought it was okay.
Yeah, he did end with, like, the bat towards the camera. And was like, it's showtime, which is one of Sting's old catchphrases. I don't know. I thought it was a little weird to have. It was kind of short. I guess we're building a Lance Archer versus Sting. That's going to be a weird one, because I don't know how Sting works with a guy that big. Sting may put him over. I don't know. We'll see. That'll be interesting to see. They then have a little package about last week, Thunder Rosa versus Britt Baker. They had the YouTube video last week after the match, and they just kind of recapped that and Thunder Rosa's interview with Tony Schiavone. What a great match again. If you haven't seen it, please go back and watch it. It's one of the best hardcore matches and one of the best women's matches of all time. Definitely historic. Thunder Rosa was definitely thankful for the match and showing how all women wrestlers should be put on the main event, and, you know, basically proving that they have what it takes, which is, I think, is really cool sentiment from her. And she really, you can tell she really believes that. I mean, it's a really big deal to her. On the stage, we then have Tony Schiavone with Britt Baker, and he says that everyone should give a round of applause for one of the best matches they've ever seen on AEW Dynamite, which I agree. Britt Baker, like, immediately steals the microphone and is like, oh, okay, that's what I get. Considering how much I gave you last week, that's all you give me. She says that people don't give her enough respect, just like Thunder Rosa didn't, and that Thunder Rosa should be thanking her because everybody will remember her after her part of history that Britt Baker wrote on her own blood. Really just throwing Thunder Rosa under the bus. Thunder Rosa had an interesting tweet, I don't know if you saw it. She's like, hey guys, can you direct me to the Britt Baker versus Britt Baker match that everybody's talking about last week? Because it doesn't seem like I was even in it. I was like, yeah, you got a good point. Like, everybody's putting Britt over. But, I mean, she did have the big spots, and she did drain, like, a quart of blood. So, yeah. I guess that's why everybody's kind of pointing to her. And also, like, I feel like everybody expected a great match out of Thunder Rosa, but not so much out of Britt Baker, so maybe more of a surprise there. But anyways, she basically told, she was like, Tony Khan, you keep trying to bring in these old legends, and you're not even realizing that you have the best legend of all time right here in your face. And she even gives, like, throws a little bit of heat at Mick Foley, which just got her nearly booed out of the building, because everybody loves Mick Foley. She said that it took him 20 years to be a hardcore legend, and she did it in one night. Yeah, so I thought this was a really, really good segment by Britt. I don't want to say it's her best promo, but it was up there. I really liked her promo when she first turned heel in Texas and she threw Whataburger under the bus. I thought that was really funny. But this was a very good segment. She had a lot of heat. I thought it was really good. You agree?
I agree. She's just really good at talking now that she's heel.
Yeah.
It seems a lot easier for her.
It's crazy. She never actually played a heel until her first turn in AEW. But it comes natural to her, and I think I was even saying it from the get-go, she needed to be healed, so you're welcome. You then had backstage Dasha Gonzalez coming up to Christian Cage, hanging out with Varsity Blondes and Dante Martin. She asked him, hey guys, what are you talking about? They basically say they're talking shop, talking about the trios match coming up. Christian Cage mentions that he's a tag team guy, so he thought he'd impart a little bit of wisdom. And up comes Frankie Kazarian. And he shows up and tells Cage that, you know, how do you have time for these guys, but you don't have time to even come say hello to an old friend? And he kind of laughs it off. And he says, I noticed your shirt, outwork everybody. Well, I've been living by that slogan for years. And I'm wondering, when does the work actually come into play? And I was like, oh, yes. Yes, I want this. I really want this match. I don't know if many of you know, in TNA, Frankie Kazarian and Christian Cage had a lot of fantastic matches back in like 07, 08. And this is a fantastic first match for Christian Cage to come back with. It's someone he has a history with, someone he has chemistry with. But not only that, I feel like Frankie Kazarian is the guy that can pull out a good match with dang near anybody. So, really looking forward to this. Next week, they did announce we will get Christian Cage's in-ring debut against Frankie Kazarian. Perfect booking, in my opinion, for a first match for him. Afterwards, we had the Varsity Blondes and Dante Martin versus FTR and Sean Spears. What did you think about this match, Riley? I know you're not huge on the Pinnacle so far.
Please don't say that name ever again.
Not a big fan of the Pinnacle name?
I don't like the name at all. It just gives me the heebie-jeebies. Okay, so Varsity Blondes and Dante Martin, they did really well. I really enjoyed watching the Varsity Blondes in this match. They always, like, I was really not wanting to like them at first because I was like, what is this? Like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
But now I'm, like, really into it. Like, I like their whole thing about them.
They had a good look, too.
Yeah, and at first I didn't like the look, but they've switched up the colors.
And they got like the baby blue colors. It looks really like classic.
Yeah, it's very like it. They remind me like especially what's his face with the mullet? That guy.
The guy from Stranger Things?
No, I'm talking about the guy on Varsity Blondes.
Oh, Brian Pillman.
Yeah,
I thought you were saying he reminds you of the guy from Stranger Things.
He does, yes. Yeah. But that's what I was gonna say. He's very like 80s-esque. And then honestly, I don't really remember much of this match except for the fact that I really liked the Varsity Blondes and Dante Martin. I thought it was weird, the ending, just like Micah, you mentioned about who ate the pin. I don't like the Pinnacle's name, but I'm excited to see what they do next.
Yeah, you are FTR's biggest fan too.
So. No. Okay, that was really quick. I'm really quick to defend myself.
Yeah, so Sean Spears did end up getting the pin on, I believe, Dante Martin with the C4 for the win, which is really interesting because a lot of people are saying that the only reason Spears is there is to eat the pins and be the fall guy. And I disagree with that. I think that Sean Spears is one of the best workers in AEW, one of the workhorses of AEW. I'm a huge fan of his. A lot of people aren't big on him. His blonde mohawk looks terrible. I'll give you that. His old look was much better.
In your opinion.
It's bad looking. It doesn't look good.
In your opinion.
It doesn't look good. I would also agree that the mullet is not the greatest look, but it does look good on Brian Pillman Jr.
It does, yeah.
I really liked this match. It was very good. I also don't really love the name The Pinnacle, but I guess like anything, you know.
Oh my gosh, stop saying that word.
This is the Pinnacle of Podcast. We're going to name this episode The Pinnacle Podcast.
No.
Welcome to The Pinnacle Podcast.
It's just one of those words that you say over and over, and it's like, is this even a word?
Yeah. Also, our dogs are fighting behind us. Can you hear that? We're a very professional podcast. But yeah, this was all about basically showing that The Pinnacle was something to be reckoned with. It worked. I think it did. It was a really, really solid match. I think the post-match promo was really good. We'll get into that because after the match, Tony Schiavone heads into the ring to interview The Pinnacle. There you go again, Riley.
Oh, gosh.
Wardlow attacks Brian Pillman, sends him out of the ring. The crowd hates it. They're chanting, "You suck," getting a lot of heat. Tony introduces the group. Cash Wheeler actually grabbed the mic, which is something you don't always see. Oh, sorry. And he says that, you know, they're not just a group. They're a family. Typical group thing to say in wrestling, let's be honest. The bald one then got the mic, was bringing up Santana and Ortiz, saying they've done well for themselves, but they don't fool them. He basically says, makes fun of the Inner Circle's comedy segments, and says this is professional wrestling. MJF then gets the mic. He calls Chris Jericho fat. He tells them to come out and face him right now, and then Tony is like, well, you know they can't do that. They're recovering. You beat them up really bad. And then Wardlow, like, places his hand on Tony Schiavone's shoulder, and MJF, like, looks at him and is like, what was that, Tony? I'm sorry. And Tony's like, nothing. I didn't say anything.
Poor Tony was like, Tony Schiavone, this whole entire show, he has just been, like, annihilated by these wrestlers. Man, like, Britt Baker is stealing the mic away from him, and he's like, what the heck? And then this time where Wardlow seriously looked like he was going to murder him.
I love
Tony
Schiavone.
With his, like, creepy smile on his face. It was so great.
It was a hilarious, hilarious moment. Tony Schiavone is so good at conveying things through his eyes.
Yes.
You know, and just, like, having little looks that are so funny. He's one of my favorites. I didn't really watch WCW that much growing up. I was a little too young for it. I mean, I've seen the matches and stuff now, but, like, JR was always my guy, but man, Tony Schiavone, I think he's my new one. He's so funny. Really enjoy him. MJF also did say that if you're in the Pinnacle, you're always on top. Maybe that's their new slogan. I don't care for it. I don't like the name of the Pinnacle either, but I do enjoy saying it because it bothers Riley. Pinnacle.
Three syllables. No, the Pinnacle. Four syllables if you count the in it.
Well, the weird thing is they didn't always say the Pinnacle. Like, I think they were announced as Pinnacle, which is even worse, in my opinion.
It's all bad. It's all trash.
Yeah. I guess the Five Horsemen doesn't roll off the tongue.
Ugh.
They could have been something like the Horsemen of the Apocalypse or the Revelation or something, and I would have preferred that over the Pinnacle. But maybe it's not a long-lasting name.
Yeah, the Revelation would have been neat, but who are we to decide their name? We just have to deal with what they choose.
I mean, we are a wrestling review podcast, so that gets a thumbs down from us. We then have a backstage promo with Team Taz, and Taz says he knows there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there coming that something's wrong with the group, that they're not getting along. He says things are fine. You know, man, this segment was so funny to me.
I can picture it in my head. Oh my gosh, like all the cues and everything from everybody as a counselor in training. This made me feel
so funny.
All of the feels.
Yeah, Taz asks Hook's like, Hook, everything fine? He's like, everything's fine, Dad. And then Ricky Starks is over there with like a Joker grin, smiling. He looks like Sheldon Cooper from The Big Bang Theory trying to smile. Like, it is so unnatural. And
he's like, he's conveying the sense of, I'm uncomfortable, yes, okay.
And he's like, oh, Will, are we good? And Will Hobbs like, yeah, we're good. And then he's like, oh, and don't worry, Cage apologized to the group for what he said last week with Sting. And then Cage's face is like, no, I didn't. I didn't say that at all. And he's like rolling his eyes, and it's, oh man, I love it.
He's cutting back and forth like, wait, what?
Yeah, and then and he asks Ricky Starks, like, oh, how are you, Ricky? And he's like, I'm absolutely good, because he's absolute Ricky Starks, get it? And then he asks Brian, like, yeah, everything good, Brian? And he's like, he like looks around and he does his little catchphrase, he's like, who better? But he like kind of half-heartedly did it.
He says, who better? And then it cuts.
Yeah, and he's like, so side-eyeing still. It was really good. Really good segment. Something different. He didn't interrupt Dobby. That was great. Yeah, I like this. I guess we're getting Brian Cage leaving Team Taz or something happening. I don't know. We'll see. We then had another Tony Schiavone segment with QT Marshall. That is not something I thought we would see this week, but I'm okay with it. I mean, it really was pretty good. A lot of people were hating on this, but I didn't think it was bad at all. A lot of people hate QT for the fact of hating QT, which is kind of the whole segment, like, the whole point of the segment. QT says he's frustrated of being known as Cody's friend and people thinking the only reason that he has a place in AEW is because of Cody. I mean, let's be honest, it kind of is, but he's a hard worker.
He's good, though. Like, the matches I've seen, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's bad in the ring. He's nothing special, really. Like, he doesn't have superstar potential, in my opinion, but I think he'll be a decent heel, which is what they're leaning towards. But yeah, he says that Cody talks about doing the work, and there's nobody outside of Tony Khan who does as much work as QT, which is probably honestly true. Tony Khan even said himself that they were up until like 5 a.m. last night, like going over next week's card and everything. But yeah, he says he's given a match here and there, and he talks about the friends, talks about all the work the fans don't see backstage, and how he's up all night and getting Cody's coffee and making sure Cody gets into a nice hotel while QT's wife sleeps alone. And then they show his wife in the crowd, which, hey guys, like three months ago, he was apparently cheating on his wife. He's never mentioned having a wife before, but like 3 months ago, he was having a midlife crisis with Allie in a sports car. Was his wife watching TV? I don't know. That was a little weird, just like dropping his wife in there. Maybe they'll work that into a story. I don't know. That's continuity, guys. I know wrestling's not great about it, but hey. But yeah, he says how his wife has to sleep alone while Cody gets to sleep next to his every night. And next week, he demands an exhibition in the ring between himself and Cody. He says he doesn't want to be taking any more meaningless bumps if it means that he has to be in Cody's shadow. And out comes Cody with no ridiculously long entrance. That was weird, right?
Not really, because he was back there listening, like, doing his normal stuff. Like, sometimes he comes out like that.
Yeah,
like, with his gear on, and he had to take off his, like, headset and everything.
Yeah, he had, like, his headset and everything. He says his heart's not in this. Cody's arm is in a sling, by the way, because Pentagon broke it last week. It's weird. Like, if your friend says, hey, okay, I want an exhibition match to prove that I'm good enough, do you do that while your friend has a broken arm? Like, no. You say, hey, get healed up, then we'll have an exhibition match, and I'll prove that I'm better than you. Not while you're injured, I'm going to prove that I'm better than you. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Cody says that he will accommodate him for next week's exhibition, and he'll even let Arn Anderson be the referee, which will be interesting. But he does have a reputation to uphold, and he's not going to hurt QT, but he's not going to allow himself to lose. He said that he's not going to hit him with the crossroads. He's not going to lock in the figure four leg lock. And he doesn't want to hurt his friend, basically. He calls QT one of his best friends. The crowd starts chanting Cody's friend, which I thought was hilarious. I guess that'll be pretty interesting. Do you think QT is going to go over in that match?
I don't know. Maybe not, just to kind of further his, like, descent into his...
I mean, he could go over as a heel. Like, he could hit him with a chair or something.
Maybe. It's hard for me to see him even as a heel, honestly. This segment, in my opinion, was lackluster. And I didn't even, like... I didn't really enjoy Cody's thing that he, like, he came out and he started talking or whatever, but he really seemed insincere.
Yeah.
Like, he seemed like, I don't know if I can say it on the podcast.
You can say it.
He seemed, like, really douchebaggy whenever he came out.
I don't know if you know this, but that's kind of his whole gimmick.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I know, but, like, this is his friend, supposedly.
Oh, hey, guys, guess what else? Talking about Cody being a douchebag. He's got his reality show.
Oh,
now.
Yes!
He's got a reality show. Top tier douche.
Yes.
Cody's
a
heel.
Yes. No. I'm really excited for that show. Actually, it looks funny because him and Brandy are pretty funny people.
Yeah, he's got his own Miz and Mrs. now.
Yeah, the whole segment with this, it was weird. It was also weird on this particular show because everything else was so good. And then this particular thing was just like, eh. But, you know, win some, lose some. Am I right?
Okay. Speaking of good, we had the Lucha Brothers and Laredo Kid versus the Young Bucks and Brandon Cutler.
This was good.
What a fantastic match this was. I thought it was weird that we didn't get Pac in it. I guess there are rumors that he's injured. I thought maybe he had to go back to Britain for a little bit, but apparently he's injured, which is a shame. Because, I mean, they literally have a trios team. Why did they bring in Laredo Kid? I was teasing with Matthew that the Laredo Kid's going to unmask and actually be Andrade, which I don't know if you've heard the news. I don't know if we mentioned it last week. I think it happened in between the shows. Andrade was released from the WWE with no 90-day compete clause, so he can work wherever he wants immediately. So I guess Charlotte definitely pulled some strings there, I would assume, and got him his immediate release, which is kind of unheard of, to be honest with you. Yeah, interesting to see where he ends up. My opinion is he should go to New Japan or Ring of Honor first, do a little bit of time there, and if he wants to jump into AEW after that, that'd be fine. But I think he needs to get the WWE stink off of him, or else it's just he's gonna be ridiculed like everybody else. And also, I don't know they have a spot for him right now. They've got a lot going on. I don't know that they need to add to the roster before they right now. I mean, they've got a lot of stuff in the works. Maybe do something else for a little bit.
Wait, didn't Andrade have like a thing, like the manager?
Zelina Vega.
Yeah, wasn't she his manager?
Mm-hmm. She was, yeah.
And she's also released?
She is also released, yes.
They could just come back and do the same exact thing.
It would be great if they waited for Aleister Black and they all three came in as like a trio. AEW loves groups.
I mean, yeah.
Whenever Aleister Black's contract does end, like that's the one guy that I would be okay with immediately jumping into AEW. Because I feel like he fills a niche that isn't filled in AEW.
Yeah, that's true. He's different. He's unique.
Yeah, he's different.
It's weird because AEW, there are so many different unique wrestlers, but he's unique from all of the unique ones that we already have. So it's, yeah.
But yeah, this match was exactly as you would expect. Lucha Brothers versus the Young Bucks, Laredo Kid, Brandon Cutler. I thought Brandon Cutler did really good in this match.
He's always good. Like, in my opinion, he always does well in matches.
Yeah, he's always solid. I forget how tall he is until he gets in a ring against, like, Rey Fénix and even Matt Nick Jackson. He's a pretty big dude, tall and lanky. But yeah, this was a very good match. It spared both the Young Bucks and the Lucha Brothers the loss. As you would suspect, Brandon Cutler did end up taking the pin, I believe, from Pentagon? Maybe. Doesn't matter. One of them. No, it was Laredo Kid.
Yeah, I was about to say, they put Laredo Kid over.
Yeah, they put Laredo Kid over. He hit the Spanish Fly on Cutler for the three count, which is an odd way to end a match, but I liked it. Basically, Pentagon and Rey Fénix had gotten the Bucks outside the ring, and it allowed Laredo Kid to go over on Brandon Cutler. I mean, Brandon Cutler's not really losing any momentum from that loss because he doesn't really have any. So I thought that was good. I would like to see more of Laredo Kid. I think we are getting him next week.
Again, the same people.
Yeah, the Lucha Brothers and Laredo Kid. But yeah, this was a really solid, quick-paced match. I guess you could call it a spot fest, but I thought they were pretty dynamic and good. Yeah, I thought it was a really good match. After the match, we got Kenny Omega again. He comes in and nails Laredo Kid with a microphone, yes. Hits him a few times with the title. He gets in the mic and says that he's having flashbacks to 2019 Fighter Fest when they all had a choice. Omega said that 3 years ago, he had a choice. He could have stayed at home with the people that loved him, I assume talking about New Japan. He could have went to greener pastures in New York, but he didn't pick AEW. He chose the Young Bucks. He chose to stay with them and make this the best wrestling promotion on the planet. And Omega says that he picks them, and they pick Brandon Cutler for this match. They never picked Omega. It seemed like every chance they had, they picked somebody else. He says that he knows that Callis can be a bit much, and he doesn't always agree with him. But he's going to give them one more chance. He holds up the two sweet, and they don't reciprocate. Matt and Nick Jackson just turn away, and Kenny Omega is further devolving. What do you think about the way that they're going with this storyline?
It's interesting because I thought that this stuff already happened, honestly. Like, I thought that they already went their separate ways whenever he won with the heel move and left and just, like, ran away. But, I mean, I like it because basically he wants acceptance from his friends that he chose, right? Yeah. Like, he chose to come and he wants acceptance from the Young Bucks. But the Young Bucks, they don't want to be those people anymore, is what I'm gathering from this
whole
thing.
Even though they were 4 months ago.
No, that's... Okay, anyways, so he wants, like, this whole experience with them again as, like, the Bullet Club, like, the old times, and they don't want any part of that. And so I really love how they're showing Kenny Omega just going downhill. Like, he's obviously out of touch with reality in this character development. Like, he's just out of touch, and it's really interesting, and it's fun, actually. Yeah.
Have you watched BTE this week?
I have not, actually.
Okay, well, I won't spoil it, but it does tie into the story as well, so go watch BTE this week.
You're gonna talk about the microphone thing.
Yeah, so after Kenny's done, the Young Bucks walk off. And Omega is standing there, and Cutler's walking off. He says, "Yeah, go be their cameraman. We're done. We're done. This is it." And he turns around and eats a double super kick from Pentagon and Phoenix, and then they hit the pile driver on him and hit him in the mouth with the microphone and leave him bleeding from his mouth. The Good Brothers come out late, as always.
They, it's like stumbling out of the heel tunnel.
They help Kenny Omega up, and Kenny Omega like looks at the camera bleeding from the mouth and like half-heartedly holds his thumb up like, "I'm okay. I'm good, guys. I made it."
I mean,
he thinks he's the good guy. It's really funny.
He kept the microphone in front of his mouth whenever he turned around. That was a mistake.
Yeah.
I don't know if he forgot that he was going to eat.
I thought it made a great
kicks,
visual, though.
But he, like, they kicked the microphone into his lip and it busted the inside of his mouth and he was bleeding. And it was so funny because he looked like he was about to pass out or like he had a concussion or something because he was just sitting there, like, dazed. And he just, like, lazily, very much like Orange Cassidy, except Orange Cassidy usually looks conscious, kind of. But it was hilarious.
Yeah, I thought it was really funny. Good Brothers late again. Curious to see where that goes.
Ugh, Good Brothers.
Yeah, Good Brothers. We then had a Jade Cargill backstage promo where she's calling out Red Velvet for asking for a rematch after Jade has already beaten her pretty decisively. And says, "You know what, Jade? We're both you know what, Red Velvet? We're both undefeated in singles action, and there can be only one top woman around here." And she continues to say that she is money, and if Red Velvet steps in the ring, she's going to be stepping up to that B word. I guess that's her line because she said that a few times now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it was a decent promo. Definitely better than her first promo. I mean, obviously she's improved. I like Jade Cargill at this point. I'm for it. I think this would be a good match.
I just can't get over how pretty her hair is.
Yeah. Also, Red Velvet was announced today as All Elite, so she officially got her contract upgraded.
And I also think that a lot of people thought she was already All Elite, because I honestly thought it was.
She had a contract, but it was like the dark contract, right? They have different contracts for different. And Cody basically said they upgraded her contract to, like, I guess, a regular roster member.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Because, yeah, I saw, like, a bunch of people comment the same thing. I thought she already was, so, yeah.
Yeah, she never did get the title card, though. We then had Nyla Rose versus Ty Conti. What did you think of this match?
It was good. I think, okay, so, I really like how Conti, she was different in this match. Like, she was a lot more aggressive, and...
Yeah, do you know the storyline behind that? Like, the reason she was being more aggressive.
Mm-mm.
There was a little Twitter spat between Nyla Rose and Ty Conti where Nyla Rose called out Brazil, which is obviously where Ty Conti's from, for losing, like, 7-1 in the last Olympics or something. And Ty Conti was like, "You know what, you can call me out, you can say what you want about me, but don't call out my country. I'm going to end you this week." And that was the story of the match. She had a lot of fire in her. I thought it was pretty cool.
That is cool. So they also went with this thing of, like, will the third time be the charm for her? Because this is apparently the third time that she's wrestled Nyla, I think. Because the first time, it was like a squash match.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. I forgot about the first time.
I think the second time might have been whenever she's, like, kind of in the Dark Order, maybe.
It was the Women's Eliminator Tournament.
Okay. So, yeah, this is the third time, and she really... The thing is, like, I've noticed she does a lot of those, like, running knee whatevers. I don't know.
Knee strikes.
Yeah, she does a lot of those. But they look really good, and I really liked her energy in this match. And she seemed to come out of her shell more, because I think that's one thing I've noticed, is she seems kind of nervous. But with this one, I think she did really well.
Yeah, I thought it was very good. I think Ty Conti is developing into a star. I thought Nyla Rose did very good playing the heel in this match. And I really like the fact that, spoiler alert, Ty Conti went over. She hit the DD Ty, which is a DDT, but it's like her finisher now. And she hits
it
really well.
It looked really good. Yeah, it really did look good. And, yeah, it was good.
She's the only person other than Moxley I've seen in the match with a DDT in quite some time. So I thought that was really good. What I didn't think was so good... was the post-match segment. After the match, Vicky is, like, grabbing at Ty's foot and then Nyla Rose beats her up a little bit. She's looking for a Beast Bomb, and she holds it, and she holds it, and she holds it, and then comes out Hikaru Shida, running out and hitting Nyla Rose with a kendo stick. There was a little bit of miscommunication there, I think. I thought it was really cool to see Hikaru Shida come out looking awesome, as always, with her white suit.
Oh, and her shoes, too. And there's probably, like, a traditional name, and I'm not going to even try. But
the shoes with the big bottoms were, like, you're taller.
But, yeah, it was pretty cool looking.
Yeah. Then out comes the bunny, and she nails both Shida and Conti with the kendo stick. Matt Hardy, the Butcher and the Blade, are out there. Hardy grabs the mic and says the women's tournament. He says the women's tournament title, which I think he meant women's title tournament, was terrible because the bunny wasn't even in it. It doesn't even count. And he says that his clients have been overlooked for far too long, and that ends now. So they're building to a match next week. I believe it's Ty Conti and Hikaru Shida versus the bunny and Nyla Rose. That's fine. I just thought this segment was out of place and unnecessary.
It also went on too long.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
They waited on... It was like they were waiting for their cue to go to commercial.
Yeah,
they were dragging it out. Or go to the next thing. And they were just, like, standing there, like, with their poses. So that's not really the wrestler's fault, I don't think. I think it was just, like, the production or whatever. It was just... It just seemed a little bit weird.
I think they could have booked this segment better, but, I mean... I don't know. What do I know? We then had the main event of the evening. Darby Allin versus Johnny Hungy, as JR calls him. John Silver. This is like a straight out of PWG match. Like, this match happened in PWG once or twice, I believe. And for all the people that say that AEW is TNA 2.0, they say that they're just taking WWE guys and putting them in the top spot. They're just getting old legends. I mean, you had Darby Allin versus John Silver, the two, honestly, two of the brightest up-and-coming stars in AEW. I think this is a great spot to put them at. I'm really glad they got the main event here. I thought this match was really good. It made John Silver look really strong. Darby Allin obviously did the thing where he sells for 90% of the match. John Silver, was he trying to... jump over the guard? Was he thrown in the barricade?
No, Darby Allin, like, I don't know if he came off the rope or, like, off the ring or if he was on the ground, but I think he speared him over that thing in the fence or whatever is there.
Yeah, so he got speared over the barricade.
I think it was a spear.
He landed on his head. I was afraid he had a concussion. He posted a picture. He's got a serious lump on his head. It's pretty bad. And also, unfortunately, he did dislocate his shoulder at this time. You could tell that it was a real injury and not a kayfabe injury because, like, he's talking to Darby throughout the whole rest of the match, and Darby's not working the injured arm. Like, normally, if you're selling an arm injury, somebody they're going to work that arm. But it was a real injury, unfortunately. John Silver said that it doesn't appear to be serious, but it's really tough of him to continue the way he did in the rest of this match, because this happened, like, in the first third of the match, probably, and he's still throwing Darby around. He's still hitting him with his right hand at times.
Yeah.
John Silver was a tough son of a gun, and actually they had a post-match promo by Darby Allin saying that, you know what, you may have lost, unfortunately. Darby Allin did win this match, but you are a tough son of a gun, and anytime you want a rematch, it's open. Which I thought was really cool. That wasn't actually aired on TV. That was just something for the fans that were there. Something I did think was weird. Sting came out and was basically like, get off my lawning, the Dark Order. Like, Darby Allin was outside the ring. And at one point, Darby Allin tries to hit John Silver with a suicide dive. And then Five jumps in front of him and takes it for him. And I think that's when Sting came out. Like, oh, don't interfere. But like, they're not doing anything wrong.
Yeah, I thought that was weird, too, because it's like, this is a face-against-face match.
Yeah, I thought it was weird,
like,
for Sting
to come out.
Like, the Dark
Order is not going to gang up on Darby Allin the way that they would have, you know, months ago.
Yeah. I'm sure there's one Sting on the show, but...
Yeah, that was kind of just... It's one of those nitpicky things. It was just like, why? Why? Like, let these people have their moment, you know?
Yeah.
But this match was really good, and I really enjoyed it. I hope that John Silver gets his time in the spotlight with, like, a championship belt at some point. Like,
yeah, the match ended with John Silver going for Brody Lee's finisher, and he even did the little, what is it, like a kiss thing that he does. And Darby Allin countered it into a code red somehow, which was really cool looking, and got the win there. I think it'll be really interesting to see if John Silver ever gets another match for the TNT title. If he hits that finisher move, will he win with it?
Yeah, that'll be really cool. Yeah.
I would like to see John Silver win the TNT title. I mean, if not now, then when? So I would have been fine with him winning here, but I would be honestly even better with him winning during a rematch, like, I don't know, a month or two down the road at a pay-per-view.
Yeah, because he is wanting it, like, Darby Allin did mention it's up for all the Dark Order, you know, to get it back. So I think that would be kind of cool.
I would like to see Alex Reynolds versus Darby Allin now, please. He doesn't get enough credit. He's really good.
Yeah, he is extremely good, too.
Yeah, they then had, like, an after-match brawl where Matt Hardy came back in.
He, like, punished Darby Allin.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't care for ending with the brawls. I know it's like a WCW Nitro thing. It was whatever. I thought it would have been better if they would have aired the Darby post-match promo putting over John Silver instead of this, but you get what you get, I guess.
Also, like, what was the point of it? Do you even know?
I think they'll probably do Darby Allin versus, like, Mark Quinn or something. Somebody from... Maybe like, Darby Allin versus The Blade or something. That'd be pretty good. Obviously, Hardy's trying to get himself involved in everything he can to get as much money as he can. Which is funny because, well, I guess the money's now technically his. I guess April 1st was the last day the money went to Hangman. It was the first quarter of the year. But yeah, interesting to see where that's going to go. This was the last segment. We did go off the air with the brawl. And what would you grade the show this week, you think?
I think I would grade it, You Came to Me First, oh my goodness, an A.
An A? I thought this was a really good, well-rounded show. It had some really good matches. It had some really good segments. I mean, I've been giving, like, every show here lately an A, so I hate to do it again, but I think that's really fair for what it is. It was a really enjoyable show. It was a really well-rounded show. It had a lot of good promos, a lot of good segments. It had some faults, that's why it doesn't get an A+, but also some really good matches. Obviously, hate to see John Silver get injured in the main event, but hopefully it's nothing serious and he'll be back to action soon. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to where they lead the Dark Order storyline with. Obviously, I'm a huge fan of Hangman, and I'm a huge fan of the Dark Order, which is not where I thought I would be when AEW first founded. The guys coming out with, like, gimps and wearing and like, making a human throne, those weren't the guys I thought I'd be cheering for, but it's amazing how it's turned around. But yeah, I thought this was a good episode, and I'm looking forward to next week, as always. We're getting Kenny Omega and the Good Brothers versus Laredo Kid and the Lucha Brothers. And honestly, if it was just that one match for 2 hours, I would tune in.
Yeah.
I think that'd be great. But yeah, that's been this week of Wrestle Life Radio. Hopefully next week, Kyle and Matthew will be able to be back with us. And it won't just be me and Riley. Maybe we'll have all four of us. Or maybe we'll just leave it to them because, good Lord, we're carrying this whole show on our back. My back is sore. I mean, come on, guys. But yeah, be sure to tune in with us next week. Wrestle Life Radio. I think on Instagram and Facebook at Wrestle Life Radio, on Twitter at Wrestle Life Pod. So be sure to check us out on all the socials and be sure to tune in next week and have an absolutely wonderful week. I'm stealing Matt's gimmick. He's not here. He can't fight me.